You're listening to Around Comics, episode 210, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Witchblade, the anime series. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by, which we have more people than last week, which was really just an hour ago, because I guess people thawed out and actually started coming to the show, because it's like 5 degrees outside.
It's not that cold.
It is cold.
It's 20. It's 23. Degrees.
It's cold. If you don't have a coat, you'll die.
Die?
Oh, wow. I wore shorts so today. I wore shorts really? To the gym.
Yeah, but I was going to say.
I was outside in the cold, and it didn't bother me.
And you're like a mountain crazy. Man, though, Mike.
Yeah, that's what I was. It's fighting a Wolverine.
Well, hey, folks, I'm Christopher Niesman. Let me get you introduced to this week's panel. First of all, DC exclusive artist, Mr. Mike Norton.
Okay, pain of the industry.
I'm not, okay, I won't call you exclusive artist.
I am a parasite, sucking everything that's good out of the comic book business.
Lucy has no idea what we're talking about.
You don't need teeth, do you? To be
these are all fake.
See? Mr. Brian Salazar, yes. My partner in crime. How you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic.
Just Oakley Doakley.
And I'm not. That's not a statement of my well-being. It's what I am.
You just are fantastic.
I just am fantastic.
Yeah. Did you buy some new nunchucks this week?
No. But the nunchuck talk has inspired me to do something new. I think I'm doing.
What? Buy another pair of nunchucks.
No. I think I'm going to start a new podcast
about nunchucks.
About super ridiculous things in this world, mostly weapons.
That's awesome!
The Overkill
can I come on
Show.
And talk Absolutely. About Ninja Stars.
Yes, you can. I hope that you would.
I had this sweet camouflaged one when I was.
See,
I lost it in the woods.
I think I'm going to call it the Overkill Show. So.
Oh man, that's awesome!
It's going to be all things outrageous.
The logo for the show is like a 45, but
a nickel plated 45 made into a knife.
And the,
it's like an anime character.
Yeah, the barrel is actually a knife.
The slogan for my show
I think
is
I've seen that in like Final Fantasy. Or
it's better to have it, not need it, than need it, not have it.
That's wow. You're going to get the South's vote for that.
All right. And our special guest this week is the writer and artist of the recently released original graphic novel French Milk. She is Miss Lucy Nisley.
Yes, that's
Nisley.
Right.
I keep on wanting to call you Kinsley. But
I know.
It's Nisley.
It's the K at the beginning.
It's always throws me. But it's Nisley. So, Lucy, thank you so much for coming by the show this evening.
Also says
my pleasure.
Knife.
Right, Knife. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. It's like, how do you
that's
pronounce
grammar.
It? She's like, like it's spelled. So, before we talk with Lucy here about French Milk, I want to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com. Mm-hmm. Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do, in fact, ship for free.
I think it's time to rewrite that spot.
It says everything it needs to.
I know, but you've been saying it for like 3 years now.
I can almost do it by... No, I can do it by heart. I don't even know why I have the paper.
Time.
You know, I put in a nice order today. I picked up...
As opposed to the horrible orders you usually put in?
That's what you usually say.
Oh, well.
I picked up the Spider-Man One More Day, the Kraven's First Hunt.
Last
time.
Or first time.
No, it is.
Okay.
It's
the female new Kraven.
Spoilers.
Finally, picked up the Abe Sapien trade paperback. And
the drowning?
Yes, that Jason Alexander did.
Oh, that's in trade now?
It's in trade now.
He's awesome.
What else? The James Jean Fables cover book, which is just absolutely gorgeous. And I got the complete bone for my shut up. For my nephew.
Not loud.
You got the complete bone.
Yeah, so whenever I give it to him, I'll use
Christmas.
Tom.
And you've been boned.
That's from Tom Cater.
It's a lovely gift. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Tom Cater, speaking of, is on assignment in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, what's he doing out there?
I think that he's beginning the vetting process for Secretary of Accounting.
That would be Treasury.
Oh, okay.
That's
fake
Hillary's
cabinet
taken the Secretary of State position, I heard today.
Yes. Yeah, this is like 2 weeks. This will be out 2 weeks.
Oh, after. She's already done something horrible.
Something
great. I don't know.
Awesome. All right. So in stock trades, they're good people. All right. Well, Lucy, you have recently come out with a really fun graphic novel. It is Touchstone Books, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Which you're going to make a lot of people really, really angry because you're like
11.
You're like 11, and you have an original graphic novel that has been published by a book publisher.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Too much success.
What
too
were
early.
You thinking?
I'm so sorry.
It's like Citizen Kane over here. let's start there before we actually talk about the book. How in heaven's name did you get a book deal? As like this is your first published work, right?
Yes, it is.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
How did that happen?
Well,
tell me your secret.
Right. Oh, sorry. For my 22nd birthday, my mom and I went to France, and I was sort of at this weird precipice in my life, so I decided to document it in journal form. I came back with it. I thought, well, I could either put some of this online for people to look at, because I had sort of a little bit of an online following, or I could make it into a mini comic and sell it at some of the indie comic festivals that I go to. But I read through it. It's like close to 200 pages. So I was like, this is going to be really hard to staple. Mm-hmm. And I should probably...
the Kinko's bill.
Yeah.
Oh.
It just came down to that.
Yep.
Can't staple it. I got to get a publisher.
That's right.
So I think I'll get a
I'm not strong enough. I need to like buy an industrial stapler or look into self-publishing. Awesome. So that's where I turned. I turned to self-publishing, and my parents actually run a small publishing company, and they have a division that's self-publishing. So I actually got the like pride and joy discount through them, through this company called Epigraph. And so I published that through them, and they hook it up with Amazon, that sort of thing. And so then I had these nice sort of very professional-looking books, and I brought them to a lot of the indie comic festivals that I go to. And at MoCA, the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Arts Festival, it got picked up by a very keen Simon & Schuster editor, mm-hmm. who was there sort of trolling
Brilliant.
For new talent. Yes.
Simon
yes, an absolute genius.
Visionary,
exactly. And she picked it up, and a couple weeks later I got the email that just said, hey, you know, we're interested in the book, and let's talk about contracts.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Just easy as pie. Just
see how easy it is to break into
well,
this industry, kids.
Yeah. Just go to France with your mom.
Oh, yeah. Don't suck.
Yeah, well, there is that. You got to try
that
not
helped.
To.
Yeah.
That is, well, the people that you are hooked up with at Touchstone are, I can tell that they care because I've received like 20 emails from I believe it's Stacy.
Yes, a very diligent publicist.
And she's just like, you know, let me send you the book, and here, can you do a review? And, oh, Lucy lives in Chicago. Can she come by the show? And I'm just like, yes, yes, okay, stop emailing me. You know? No, she was great and
okay.
And obviously cares about the work because she's been very diligent about having us talk with you. And
okay.
Here you are.
Sorry, I just got to the manatee page.
There's some manatee love in this.
I love
this
manatees.
Book. Who doesn't?
Well, the actual book it's French Milk, and it, as you already alluded to, it is your written and drawn journal of a little book ended, you know, here in the States, but the majority of the book is about the month that you spent with your mom living in France.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And eating.
Yeah.
Lots and lots and lots
yeah,
of eating.
Yeah, about 24 hours a day eating.
Which, I want to talk about that. That is an amazing thing that a lot of people only dream about, to say, I want to go live in Paris for a month. How did that happen? Your mom must really like you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm the baby. I'm the only child.
Okay.
She, so, you know, like I said, I was graduating from college and we were sort of becoming a little more independent of each other. And my mom's a former professional chef. She worked as a chef for many years. And so I've sort of been brought up around food and art. And that's where our real sort of common loves are in food and art. So the whole idea of going to Paris for her 50th birthday and my
Mecca.
Yeah, exactly. We were going there as like pilgrims to worship at the altars of the things that we love together. And it was really like
the altar of the croissant.
Right, exactly. Of the foie gras. The foie gras.
Goose liver.
You don't know about this?
I know.
The Chicago like controversial food item.
Yeah, you got into like the whole ban.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have strong feelings about the band.
Well, you know, I had strong feelings about the band because one of my favorite, can't even really call it a restaurant. It is, but it's not. Hot Dogs.
I love Hot Dogs.
Everybody with taste.
Why do you go to Hot Dogs on Saturday?
To get the duck fat fries and the foie gras. Yeah. Oh, my God.
They do their fries in duck fat.
Yeah. It's unreal.
Fries are so good.
Sorry.
You can only get the duck fat fries on Saturdays, yep. And it's like line out the door.
Actually, they shut him down because he refused to adhere to the foie gras
ban.
Yeah.
Why was there a ban on duck fat?
It's not duck fat. It's duck liver that's been overstuffed. So they overfeed the ducks and it's kind of cruel.
Or ducks.
Well, yeah, but think about like KFC chickens.
So
they're kept in a box. They never see the light of day. They never touch ground. I'd rather
ducks.
Be a foie gras duck fed to death. Oh, forget it. That's how I want to go out.
Yeah,
that sounds just like justification for
if you're
ruled for my favorite food. Yes. I know.
If you remember the Simpsons episode where Homer goes to hell and they keep stuffing donuts in, that's kind of how they make foie gras.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's I don't blame you for not eating the fries, Mike.
It's so rich, so good though.
I'm just a picky eater.
You don't give a shit about ducks.
I don't
ducks.
Care about ducks. Yeah. I'll eat the head off of them if you taste it good.
Now, how did you come up with the idea that one there? I want to do an artist journal. And this is, by the way, this is not what I would call a sequential graphic novel. It is really, you know, one page kind of tells the story of that day or something that happened in a day. And you have a couple, you know, that run a few pages. But how did you come up with the idea that you were going to do the kind of this art journal?
Well, I've been sort of doing autobiographical comics and that sort of thing all through college. And I really just, I looked at things like Craig Thompson's Carnet de Voyage was a big inspiration, of course, and all sorts of, you know, the way that people documented their work in, you know, the Montmartre, like, bars where people would paint in their journals and write in their journals. And, you know, I wanted to be able to write about my experiences and the things I ate and saw and be able to illustrate it as well. And there are actually photographs in the book as well, mm-hmm. to sort of add another visual dimension.
It kind of grounds you back to,
right.
You know, it's like, oh, well, this is what the people actually look like.
Or exactly.
This is, you know, the carnage of a dinner that you have been, you know, at and that kind of stuff. You can actually see, I don't even really know if it's an evolution of an artist throughout it, but you can see that you're playing with some different styles and that, you know, it does feel like it's okay. This is a person that is still trying to kind of find themselves as an artist and is
right.
still trying different things. And have you do you feel like you've kind of found a style at this point, or are you still kind of learning and growing? And
definitely learning and growing. I'm in my second year at the Center for Cartoon Studies, and you know they're encouraging us always to be trying.
What are you doing
different...
that for? You got a published book already. Wasting your time.
You walk in, you know, with your book and say, "Look at this, suckers!
Give me my degree right now."
Publish. Suck it.
Everybody must hate you there.
Oh, man. You have no idea.
Well, you're at the Center for Cartoon Studies now. Where is that located at?
It's in Vermont.
Okay.
It's at White River Junction, Vermont, which is like the little butthole of Vermont. Can I say that on the
yes.
podcast?
Yes. Sure.
Yeah, okay. It's just like this really small town, mm-hmm. Surrounded by really nice towns. So So I spent last year there, and it's great because you really focus on your work, because there's not much else,
nothing else to do
to focus on.
Look at trees.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. But you started your college education here in Chicago. Yes. At the School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
Yeah, I graduated there.
And you still live here in Chicago.
Yep.
But go to school in Vermont.
Right.
But you're from Albany.
I'm from upstate New York. Yeah.
Okay.
Originally Manhattan.
Okay, this is a world, and you lived for a month in Paris. That's I hate right. you.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to hear that.
You world traveled.
There's so many reasons for people to hate me.
I'm so jealous. I'm this world traveled gal and published and.
Well, maybe if you were talented.
I know. If I had, if
you
yeah,
had any
yeah.
talent,
if I could do more
She's
than stick figure.
Outlived all of us.
Yeah, I know. Already. I know. Get out of here. No, I'm joking. What was your experience at the Art Institute like? Because we've actually talked to Jeffrey Brown went to the Art Institute, correct? Mm-hmm. Dave Wachter is a grad.
Really, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. How did you like your time at the Art Institute?
I've been
I
there.
Really liked it. Yeah, a lot of people.
Been the school, not the school, not the museum.
Oh, well, you know.
Oh crap! Then
that happened. Oops. But there's actually quite a lot of comic artists that are there.
Yeah, Jeremy Tinder is coming out of there. Lily Carre, a lot of like indie people are coming out of there now. And it's great. It's actually sort of developing a little bit of a sort of style, like a school of comics from the Art Institute, which is strange because there's no comics program at the Art Institute.
Wow.
Yeah, there's no concentration. But they're one of the only art schools in the country that really isn't concentrating on comics as an art form. But it's changing, actually. My friend Jeremy Tinder, who graduated and did a couple books with Second. Yeah, yeah, he's wonderful.
And Lily Carey, her Woodsman Pete from Top Shelf. That's Lily Carey.
Yeah, it's an excellent book.
Yeah, they've got some good talent coming out of that school. And then, you know, Jeffrey. You know,
so they don't need no comics program, apparently.
Yeah.
It's like Rocky IV. They don't need the fancy training. They go out in the woods and chop shit up.
Give this man a tree trunk.
Make paper.
The old
comics pioneers.
Way. That's right.
Well, I mean, there's maybe something to be said of you know, the more traditional learning of art there.
Yeah, and, I mean, we get traditional painting classes we have to work with.
Yeah, but that translates maybe into you know, the different style of cartooning and comic art that you see coming out of it.
Right, definitely.
Now why the just out of curiosity, why the need to now go to the Center of Cartoon Studies? So are you really wanting to learn the craft of sequential storytelling? Or are you just like being in school?
It was sort of a mix between the fact that I like to be in school and I also was really intrigued by all of the visiting artists and the faculty that they had there. I mean, they have people like Linda Barry and James Kochalka, and Steve Bissett is like, you know, he teaches everyday classes.
Really?
It's unbelievable.
I think Allison
Bechtel.
You're not going back to school.
Last year.
Vermont's very nice.
I actually, you know, I was coming back from New England last year, and
you're traveled.
Well, yeah, I was in New Hampshire in the airport, my wife and I were getting ready to fly back to Chicago, and I met this gal that went to the Center for Cartoon Studies, and I can't remember her name.
Oh, no.
You know, save my life.
Well, it is a tiny school, and there are only about three girls in the whole school, so
yeah.
What did she look like?
Little girl with the kind of horn-rimmed glasses.
Oh, that was Robin Chapman.
Robin Chapman, yes. Yes, that is her.
I know who Robin Chapman is.
Yeah.
I met her at SPX a long time ago. I think it was her first thing she had ever done.
Oh, wow.
She was there, it was like for her first trip there. Now
yeah,
she's
publisher
like
of True Porn.
Indie
she's
superstar Robin Chapman now.
Yeah, very nice gal. It's
right.
I think
she
was
very nervous when I met her. She was like very quiet.
Well, you're
9 feet
tall.
Oh, that's true. It was SBX. Everybody's like thinking I'm a narc or something.
Yeah, you were
like,
the
why
man.
Are you here?
Well, I was coming back from the New York Comic Con. We had spent a couple days up in New England. We were flying back to Chicago, but it was that weekend, the next weekend after New York, was Stumptown out in Portland. So she was on her way to Portland, and she saw me. I was reading, I think, Jeremy Hahn's Narcoleptic Sunday.
Oh, really?
And she saw me reading that in the very small airport in New Hampshire. And she's like, are you going to Portland? I'm like, no, I'm going to Chicago, but why do you ask? And so, yeah, I got to know her a little. Very, very nice gal. Very
yeah,
nice gal.
She's great.
Going back to kind of the style of French Milk, like I said, it's not really a sequential art traditional comic book. Do you is this something that you see doing more in this style, or are you going to do sequentials? Is that something that you're interested in, or is this kind of something that you want to stick with as far as your storytelling device?
Well, most of the stuff I'm working on now is pretty traditional sequential comic stuff, but I took some ideas from French Milk. Like, I hadn't realized how much I talk about food in the book until I got home and people were like, all of this entire book is about food. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, you know, I liked writing about food. People seem to like reading about food. So the book I'm working on right now is a sequential graphic novel about food. So so that's sort of a nice progression.
I think I was telling you earlier, whenever I was reading the book a few nights ago, it was like 10 o'clock and I'm about 3/4 of the way through it, and I kept getting up to go to the refrigerator, and I would open the refrigerator and do, you know, kind of the refrigerator stare where it's like, what do I want? I'm like, I'm not hungry. Why am I standing in front of the refrigerator? Every page of this book has something to do with food.
That's
in
true,
it.
Yeah.
It, which I'm sure is a lot of living in Paris for a month. It's,
right.
You know, we measure time in between meals.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly.
But I found out what a French pickle.
Cornichon. Yeah,
that just sounds dirty.
Sorry,
the French pickle.
I don't know.
Well, you know, it's. I'm like, my wife minored in French, and I was like, "What is this?" And she's like, "Oh, it's a pickle." I'm just like, "Why didn't she just say pickle?"
You're not saying it right.
Did you have any qualms about, you know, writing, basically showing people your diary?
Yeah.
And somebody, I mean, would
you mean like guilt that I'm doing something so self-indulgent? Or?
No, not at all. I mean, did you ever have any questions about, well, you know, is this, you know, things that I want to show people?
Oh, right, yeah.
You talk about your sex life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You talk about, I know the two times in the book where you had your period. I mean, it's like, wow, she's really keeping a journal. It's like,
true, yeah.
I don't know if I need to know this, but yeah, I mean, it's very much a journal. It's some very personal stuff that's going through, you know, how personal it is. You walked in with this gentleman over here, and I said, John? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, wow, I'm really glad, because if you weren't John, I'd feel like an asshole. I know your boyfriend from this book. And that
right.
was one of the things I wanted to ask you whenever you came here. Like, are you still with John? You know? You know? So,
what's
yeah.
the season finale? Yeah.
But yeah, is it weird having that? I mean, I know, I feel
like
I know
contractually obligated to be together now.
I know, forever. Every fan of mine will forever be like, "How's John? What's going on with John? You and John?" But
hate you.
Oh yeah.
But is that odd, kind of putting that much of yourself out there?
Well, other than John's mom who reads my work, I'm not really that embarrassed about most of the stuff. But you know, she reads it, and I'm kind of like, I'm sorry to be exposing your son about this. But but other than that, you know, like, something that I felt pretty strongly about is that there's so many very confessional male comic artists that, you know, Joe Matt, who writes about really intimate, embarrassing things in his life, you know, I masturbated 14 times today. And like, okay, you don't really have to know that.
He's
but,
proud of that, though.
Oh,
he's not,
totally.
He's
not, well,
it's
yeah.
not embarrassing.
It's, that's not so confessional as it is, yeah, bragging.
I'll guarantee you he didn't.
What?
Let's not get into a contest here.
On the podcast.
What the? Good Lord.
He'll come and prove it to you.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah.
You want a bet, mister?
I'm editing that out.
What are we talking about?
Get back to the book. What
embarrassment about my journal. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's funny when people come up to me and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, when you got your period and, like, were premenstrual and stuff like that. And I'm just like, yeah, you know about that now. That's swell. But for the most part, like, you know, it's not like I'm talking about my most horrible intimate moments.
Sure.
There's, like, a scene in the book where I have a panic attack about finances. And, like, every 22-year-old, I think, can identify with that moment of just being like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to live in a box. Mm-hmm. So
staring down student loans.
Right, exactly.
And actually having to go out and work and
repo my car.
Yeah.
One of the things that is impressive for me is that you have accomplished what no other comic book creator that I know of has. you have created a graphic novel that my wife liked. And that is no small achievement.
Woohoo, that's awesome.
She sat this, I asked her, I'd have her read a ton of stuff. And she'll be like,
that poor woman.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, she read Alex Robinson's Tricked, and which I loved. And I was like, how was it? She's like, yeah, it's all right. I'm just like, come on, throw me a bone. But yeah, she sat yours down, and I was like, what do you think? She's like, I loved it. I was like, really, why? She's like, because I didn't feel like I had to be sad or feel guilty about anything. It was really nice to just read a story about a mother and a daughter that actually enjoy each other's company.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad she felt that way, because, you know, a lot of criticism from the book has become this sort of like, well, it's not really a story, or, you know, it's like, not really about anything, but it's there. It's just, it's nice sort of to lay back and enjoy the ride sometimes with a comic, and I like that my work is sort of letting people do that a little bit.
Yeah, it really is. It's, you know, I don't want to call it a cute book. It's not a cutesy book, but I mean, there's not a tremendous amount of drama in it. It's a nice story about a mother and a daughter spending time with each other, doing something that most people only dream of. And, you know, you guys didn't have like this knockout confessional fight where it's like, you never loved me. And blah, blah,
really?
Blah.
Man, I misread this thing, because I thought there was,
you know, it was
right,
it was
after the manatee.
Oh,
but,
I was distracted.
And that's what my wife really enjoyed. And she wanted to, she made sure to tell me, well, tell her I liked it.
Oh,
and why.
Thank you.
Is, yeah, it's, she read Fun Home, which is a great work. And Josh from iFanboy had the best description of Fun Home. He said, I liked it, I didn't enjoy it. It was a very good, but it wasn't an enjoyable read. Where,
right, it's a little bit difficult.
It's a very heavy, you know, very heavy subject matter.
Yeah.
And where yours is, I liked it and I enjoyed it. It was a nice, light read.
Okay,
and,
thank you.
Yeah, so... anyone out there with a spouse that keep trying to get them to read comics and they don't like Green Lantern, you know, this I know, and
they don't like
she
Green
thinks
Lantern.
She thinks Green Lantern is ridiculous. It makes me sad.
Kind of stupid.
She's stupid.
You draw him.
I draw Green Lantern.
Yes, you do. You
occasionally.
Did
I have a couple times.
Yeah,
I don't really like him. I'm
You're hurting me.
He's a space cop. Come on, it's not stupid sounding when you say it out loud. Space
when
cop.
When you say it like that.
Yeah, sorry.
Speaking of comics, what comics do you enjoy? Are you a big X-Men fan?
Well, growing up, I read Archie comics, and Calvin and Hobbes, and Tintin, and Asterix. There is. Yeah, I went to the Hergé show in Paris, and I write about it. But
there's
the
also giant styrofoam testicles.
Yep, giant lavender scented styrofoam testicles.
Why lavender scent?
I don't know.
Oh, poor duck. No one shot a duck.
Oh, you have no right then.
It was accidental. I wasn't
shooting very at a deer. Well. It was a drive-by duck.
A man. He was shooting at a man.
It was running off.
I was
with
shooting at a hunter
who had,
and
run
I
off,
missed
who had run off with your patriotic
with
nunchucks.
My duck.
So, I read mostly independent comics?
Well,
or?
Yeah, I read a lot of independent comics. I read a lot of stuff by, like, friends that I know from... Hope Larson graduated from the School of the Art Institute.
I was going to say this is sort of... evocative, but just your brushwork is sort of like...
Oh,
it
thanks.
Reminded me a little bit. And also of Craig Thompson.
Oh,
too,
thank
so,
you.
Yeah.
But yeah, Hope contacted me when I was a freshman at the school and sort of took me under her wing, took me to my first comics convention. So I read anything that she makes, of course, and I read, you know, whatever Mal makes, Brian O'Malley. I read a lot of, Raina Telminger. I think I'm pronouncing her name wrong. I've known her for years, and that there's no excuse because my name is always mispronounced by my friends.
She calls you Kinsley.
Oh, everybody does. Everybody. Kinsley, nicely, like everything. It's fine. Like, I don't care. But let's see. Jess Fink, I love. She's an indie comic artist. I don't think she has anything professionally done. Of course, Jeremy Tinder. Grant Reynolds is here in Chicago. I have sort of a little comic collective here that I read all of their work that comes out. Lily Carre, of course. So yeah, I mean, it's a lot of indie people that I sort of have to keep up with all the time. So I'm
they're friends,
right?
Oh, did you get my new book? It's on my nightstand. Right. I'll talk to you about it next week.
Exactly.
This is David Peterson, creator of Mouthguard, and you're listening to Around Comics.
How did you enjoy there's a lot of lettering, obviously, in this. Was that a fun experience, or was that sort of the work part of it more so than the fun drawing?
Because I did it as a journal, it was like a little bit every night, so it was okay. But when I like edited it for real publication, big publication, there were just so many places where I had to fix the lettering and so many misspellings and,
Now, were you literally, how much of this was done, literally as you were going through the trip, or did you do
98% of
most
it?
Of it?
Wow. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of pictures of you, like, drawing where you're at a cafe.
Complaining when you're on the train.
Right, it's moving. I can't draw right.
Hey, wait a minute. That's Jeffrey Brown.
It does look like Jeffrey Brown.
What are you doing on a bed with Jeffrey Brown?
No, that's her. Oh. Whenever you're sick, you look like Jeffrey Brown.
Jeffrey Brown.
I guess.
Jeffrey Brown is me sick. Perfect.
He's like the universal icon for sick people. Yeah, a little picture of Jeffrey Brown, a little cartoon.
When you're sickly, you kind of look like Jeff. Very nice. So you talked about the next book that you have in the works. Do you have a publication date that you're looking at?
Or? No, I'd love to have a finish date that I'm looking at for that book. It's just I'm using it as my thesis for the Center for Cartoon Studies, and it's sort of it keeps getting bigger. I keep coming up with more things I want to add. I have like this endless memory of food things that I've eaten that just keep entering into this book. So it's going on and on and on. And hopefully it'll be done and published at some point.
Outstanding. And obviously you're still here in Chicago. So plans to stay in Chicago? Is this home for you now? Or
for the time being? Yeah. Okay. I mean, I just moved back in July, and I'm loving living back here. It's great. Except we'll see how I feel in February.
Yeah.
And then I'll be moving to Hawaii or whatever, the warmest place I can find and afford.
Yeah.
So
not Hawaii.
Hawaii's not a picture.
Good point.
Kentucky's pretty cheap.
Yes, I see Alabama in your future.
did you take the pictures in the book?
Almost all of them.
That's a great picture. That's your dad, right?
Thank you. Yeah, that's my dad.
Great.
Yeah, I took almost all the pictures. There's a couple by my friend David of me and a few by my mom. All the ones of me are like by my mom.
Well, Lucy, I think that's we can wrap up and let you back into the city. What you write so well about it. It's another thing I loved about it, because I love Chicago. It's I moved here because I love the city, and the love for Chicago definitely shines through. It's okay. As much as you talk about obviously Paris, it sounded like you were very happy to come back to this city. And there's Daly kind of coined this phrase that a lot of people have really made fun of, that he wanted to make Chicago the Paris of the West.
Right.
But you actually kind of draw some, mini comparisons and to see that this really is a cultural city. So I enjoyed that, and your kind of wrap up about it. So we need better dairy, obviously.
Right, yes.
So,
that could improve. Although we are really close to Wisconsin, so.
Mm-hmm. And announced today, which Sal and I heard on NPR, the number one symphony orchestra in the United States.
Wow, that's sweet.
People are just kissing Barack Obama's ass.
We got culture here.
Yeah.
All right, well, Lucy, thank you so much for dropping by.
My
and
pleasure.
Know that you're welcome to come back anytime, and definitely keep us updated on your future endeavors.
Sure, great. Thank you.
Or is it General Steel? It is flashing back to Paul Harvey.
I was going
to
say.
All right. We'd like to thank Miss Lucy Nisley for dropping by the shop this evening. Once again, her book is called French Milk. It is available through a Touchstone Books, and it retails for $15 US, which is worth.
Dean, how much is that in France?
A lot of francs. I'm not for sure. I don't know how we are Sinatra. Against the dollar.
It's a Frank Fontaine.
It's a lot of pesos from what I hear these days. So now playing the role of Lucy Nisley is Mr. John Suntress.
Read my dainty book, French Milk. It's dainty like I am. She's a little wisp of a woman.
Yeah.
She seemed very sweet. Very nice girl.
Yeah, cutie little
She had
girl.
Her dude with her. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to do anything.
I was going to say, yeah.
No, I'm making moves. No,
you making moves
cool.
on our
I
guest,
cool.
John?
No, I was cool. I kept my distance, but no. She seemed like a very sweet girl.
Jesus.
Can we just edit this whole discussion out?
Daughter. It kind of weirded me out, man.
Well, she's young enough to be your daughter.
Is she really? What, is she 18 or whatever?
No, she's like 23.
Fuck, she is old enough. That's
not good. Jesus Christ.
John.
Can't we have a 30 and older rule in, like, in this movie? God damn it.
Not in comic books.
I guess not.
All right. I do want to tell people a little bit about Witchblade, the anime series. It is available now on DVD and digital download. Based on the comic book series from Top Cow Productions, the anime series goes into the future to tell the tale of a new bearer of the Witchblade and the conspiracy that surrounds her burden. The 24-episode series box set features a wraparound box art by Mark Silvestri. The box set includes 100 minutes of extra features, including all you want to know about Top Cow, with interviews and a tour. Witchblade is also available as a digital download, available on iTunes, PS3, Xbox, and Amazon. Visit www.funimation.com/witchblade to view clips of the series and the box art. So there you go. Witchblade, the anime series.
I've watched the 100 minutes of special features, and yeah, it really is. It's neat. The Top Cow guys, Silvestri gives a tour of the Top Cow offices, and Hawkins and Silvestri and other Top Cow guys just give their opinions on comics in general in a couple of Q&A sessions. It's good. It's very cool. Plus, you got the series itself, which was very cool on IFC back when they were showing it.
Yeah, they've released it like twice. They had the individual DVDs that you could buy for like $20 a piece or something, but now they've got the complete series in the absolute edition of it. Which speaking of, series box sets, Amazon had the complete Buffy box for like $70 today.
Yes.
Zoinks!
It's a Buffy box myself.
Boy, oh boy.
Oh, yeah, our female guest leaves and
locker room is open. Come on in.
I apologize.
Well, we haven't talked about them funny books in a while.
Why are you reading those funny books, boy?
Let's ease into the funny book talk, because you've got a book that's kind of about
it's kind of
books,
funny,
but
it's pretty cool. It's Batman Murder at Wayne Manor, an interactive mystery written by Dwayne Swierczynski and illustrated by David Lapham.
Is it Lapham?
Yeah, it's Stray Fish. Isn't it Stray Fish?
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's David Lapham and Dwayne
Swierczynski. Stray Bullets, rather, and what was Silverfish?
Silverfish.
Stray Bullets, of course.
He did the Tales of Mystery.
He did a Daredevil.
Mm-hmm. No, doing Young Liars right now.
Young Liars, thank you. That's
there
right.
You go. Stray Bullets is awesome.
Yes, indeed.
I picked this up at the bookstore. I don't know. I was just looking around and happened to see it and thought maybe it would be cool for my kids, but it turns out it was cool for me and not really so much for my kids.
Well, Dwayne, we shouldn't short shrift Swierczynski, by the way.
Iron Fist?
Not only Iron Fist and Cable, but also an amazing crime writer who's written fine books like The Wheelman and is one of the great young crime writers of today. He's
well,
cool,
this is certainly a. I was pleasantly surprised by the story. It's a cool little book. It's basically a murder mystery with starring Bruce Wayne, Batman, in Gotham, and it's a neat little book where you're going as you're reading it, and Bruce Wayne comes across clues, or Batman comes across clues to this murder mystery. They actually have them in the book. There's pages that have these little envelopes sort of glued in them, and inside the envelopes are different clues, like a photograph of Thomas Wayne, and at a costume party, there's a coroner's report from the Gotham coroner's office.
That's cool.
Different stuff like that. So as he finds clues, you sort of find clues, and it was just kind of neat to go through the story and do that. And the geek in me was just like, oh, you know, kind of turned on by the fact that there's these little neat sort of Gotham, you know, artifacts in here. But the story, I was really surprised and pleasantly so by the quality of the story itself. And I kind of consider it, when I picked it up, more of a gimmicky kind of thing. But the actual murder mystery is really good. And it's basically, it starts off with Bruce as Batman fighting, you know, finding trying to foil an assassin that's killing someone. But the real story is, when he gets back to Wayne Manor, he wakes up the next day and he's been having some landscaping done. I guess he had done something in the Batcave that had screwed up some landscaping in the front lawn, and he had a crew of landscapers working there.
He was moving the dinosaur.
Something like
screwed
that.
Screwed up the rose bushes.
And
Sir Camelon has come to do the back 90.
Very
well, Alfred.
And the crew finds a dead body in the front lawn. And so then.
What?
Yeah, there's a.
Hey, Mr. You Wayne. Said this story was good.
No, it was.
We're just firing up the mower. We thought we hit a rabbit, but.
Batman doesn't notice it. Fucking dead body on his yard.
Well, as you read the story, you find out why.
Okay,
so then, obviously the Gotham police are called in, and now he's a suspect. But the story turns in. This is a body that's been dead for about 30 years.
Wow.
And now the main suspect is his father, Thomas Wayne.
I was
Wayne,
just going to say,
the doctor,
Daddy Wayne, yeah, killed somebody.
And so the story is you know, he's very compelled to, you know, to obviously clear his father's name, but. Really, the main theme throughout it is that he's starting to question what he's always believed about his father, of being this very pure and honorable person, and now he's sort of questioning that, because as the evidence starts coming out, it's pointing more and more towards Thomas Wayne, and so he's driven to figure this clear his father, and as it goes on, you know, obviously you learn, you know, the clues and everything, but the clues are very neat, because, you know, it does, you know, give you the opportunity to sort of figure out what's going on. In the end, like a lot of murder mysteries, I mean, there's some, you know, some spidery webs that are sort of, you know, pulled apart and to unveil this, you know, complex mystery to
Old
some
man
degree.
Marston, just like Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, kind of.
I would have gotten
but
away
overall,
with it too.
Overall, it was pretty solid probably much more of a Bruce Wayne story than a Batman, mm-hmm. even though he's running around in the costume.
Like Bruce Wayne story.
But it really is him dealing with this issue of, is his father who he thinks he is?
Is it one of those kind of stories where you try and figure it out before you get to the end?
Yeah, I was going to say, how'd you do? You, junior criminologist? Did you?
No, I did okay. I mean, I figured out a few things as I was going through.
But did it make sense at the end?
It did. I mean, it certainly made sense.
It wasn't a rabbit out of a hat kind of reveal.
No. I mean, he had, you know, it was pretty tightly written where everything, you know, as you're going on, there's this other subplot that's happening. And you're trying to figure out how that plays into it, and you pretty early on you realize that, you know, it may not be Thomas Wayne, and you're trying to kind of figure out who it is, and there's these other characters that are involved but you're sort of trying to put the pieces together of how this all works, and it kind of reminded me of like an Agatha Christie book, you know, where it's like you.
The drawing room kind of,
yeah, sort
of,
yeah, yeah.
Here almost, are all the suspects, and
a little bit, yeah, and you're trying to puzzle it together. And
Mr. Faversham had only one killer, and that killer's name is.
That's when the knife goes into his back.
but overall, I just really enjoyed going through it and pulling out things like I said, like the coroner's report, and there's a part where he. He meets an old friend at a restaurant bar thing, and he has the friend write an address down on a coaster, and the coaster is actually in the book. You pull out the coaster, and the notes on the back of the coaster. I got to find it here. There's a whole newspaper, Gotham.
I was going to say, yeah, Gotham Gazette,
Gotham
right there.
Gazette right there.
It's very cool. Or Gotham Globe.
Oh, yes, yeah, Gotham.
That's the rival of the Gazette.
Here's the coaster.
Oh, sweet.
And the, you know, and the handwriting comes into play in and then all these, well, it's part of the story, sort of. But
what kind of beer?
It's the
or is it the bar?
The Aubrey James Restaurant and Nightclub.
Yeah.
Sweet.
sophisticated dining.
And then in the at the end or near the end, there's
I'm sure if it was filmed here, it would be filmed with Twin Anchors.
Oh, that was, I don't know. James Aubrey, of course, the Smiling Cobra of CBS fame, was a CBS executive that was quite an asshole.
Near the end, there's some DNA sample reports from the Bat computer that he prints out because he's doing some DNA testing. And then at the very end of the book, the last chapter is sealed in this level 6 access required.
What?
Where you have to get into the Bat computer.
Did you unseal it?
Yeah, I did.
The collector and you'd be like...
Yeah, there was a part of me that was like, I was like, there's a sticker basically that...
Can I open it without tearing the sticker?
That seals it, yeah. And I'm sitting there trying to peel it apart.
You need a TV.
And that has the reveal? It tells you everything?
Yeah, well, it's the whole last chapter of the book.
You didn't tear the sticker.
Hell no, I didn't tear the sticker.
Good for you. Good for you.
That's the whole last chapter of the book is
very
in there.
Wow, it is gimmicky, but it's awesome.
It is. I don't remember what it costs.
I wonder how a project like that gets done.
It was $24.95.
That's all right.
It was Quirk Books and DC Comics, obviously. But
I wonder if this is the same company or the same guys that helped Rucka make the artifacts for the Crime Bible.
It reminds me of the Crime Bible.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Which never really was published for anybody, but it was just a neat little thing that Greg was giving to comic stores and a few comic journalists, and he gave one for me and Chris to like peruse and stuff. I've got it at home still, and it's the same thing. It's passports and a little page from the Gotham. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the first one is
photos,
shell casings and things like that. Yeah,
show bill for Darkseid's bitch.
Yes, yeah. The band.
The first clue is found on the body, and it's a card invitation to a masquerade party at Wayne Manor.
Was this
30
the party
years
where-
ago?
Is this the party where Tom was dressed like Batman?
Yes, and then later on, there's a picture of that of Thomas and what's her name?
That's kind
of cool. Martha, and another family who's involved in the story.
That's right, Martha.
And he's wearing.
I have to read this. So I'm actually interested.
Once again, the name.
There's
of
a map.
It?
It's Murder at Wayne Manor. Batman Murder at Wayne Manor, an interactive mystery.
Well, the fact that it's Wierzynski and Latham. I mean, that really gives it credibility from a crime standpoint.
An old black and white photo of the Waynes at Wayne Manor and their Halloween.
Hey, Todd, nice mask.
And he even commented. It's like he even talks about how. Sort of ironic it is that he's wearing that costume and
well, that's a throwback to the Golden Age. There was a famous story. And in fact,
ball.
Even I think R.I.P. references. Yeah, exactly. Thomas
there's
Wayne
a,
Batman.
There's a page out of Thomas Wayne's journal that there's a couple of clues in that.
Fascinating.
And, yeah, I mean it was just fun, and the little interactive parts, while it is sort of hokey and gimmicky.
It's
it was actually
the right amount of hokey.
Yeah, well, that was sort of it. It was just enough to be fun and not over the top, and it made sense. I mean, it actually enhanced the experience of reading it. The one thing I was kind of upset about is they have the two pages of the Gotham Globe with all these different stories in there, and some of the stories are
relevant.
Yeah. Well, all of them are relevant actually, but they glued the last page in, so you can't read
the back of
the last page. I was just a little upset, but there's...
I see a baseball score. How did our Gotham...
Yeah, the Gotham Knights.
Our Gotham Knights. Boy, oh boy.
What are
our happy totals?
They fend off the Metropolis meteors.
Boy, I hate the meteors. Our happy totals.
But as a longtime Batman fan and nerd, it just... all these little kind of artifacts.
Hey, Norton's a suspect, apparently, on the front page of the Gotham Gazette. What the hell is he doing there?
Norton. That's
Ed Brubaker.
Mid-level manager says he heard about some mulatto girl shot him in the mouth and left him in the hotel near the mid-south of a cell.
I can talk about the new Krypton stuff forever, but if you guys haven't
read that story,
Krypton!
I read it.
You have not read it yet? Man, if you're not...
I heard you talking about it.
Yeah, I did too on 11 o'clock.
If you're not a Superman fan or have never really
you guys
been...
listen to that show? I was curious.
What do you think?
Well, as I was telling Mike earlier, and I love Vince, and I appreciated the shout-outs on the show.
He's Cuckoo's Magoo.
But he is Cuckoo's Magoo. Goddamn. Seriously, I mean, it's like... It is just some of his reasoning behind Everything.
There's no reasoning.
Well, yeah, but it, well, I liked a couple weeks ago when he was talking about he's already got it figured out that, you know, DC should have like a weekly book and, you know, and make them short little features, and that way Jim Lee can crank out 8 pages a month. I'm so glad that Vince is there to manage Jim Lee's career. he would be making thousands as opposed to the millions he probably makes doing the game for DC and stuff. But there's that. But then also the stuff with the Sinestro Corps, and he thinks the Kilowog guy is really Doomsday for the Sinestro Corps. I forget the...
He would have preferred that Doomsday be yeah. used.
We've decided
for...
that 11 o'clock is the Art Bell of comic book podcasts.
Yeah, because there's a lot of conspiracy theories as to why decisions are made.
It's like this conspiracy theory podcast, yeah. And you even have the wacko calling in like three times.
Daryl.
Who kills me. What's scary is that I try and be the voice of reason on that
show. Well, we were just saying that you were. Voice of reason. The drunk guy is the voice of reason on that show.
Well, I really think it's just a matter of
when I'm the fucking voice of reason. When I'm the voice of reason, something's fucking
exactly
wrong.
big red flags. But no, I agree with you. I am a longtime Superman fan, and really I was happy when I heard James Robinson was joining the Superman writing team, and it's only improved the Superman book itself. And I think Sterling Gates is doing a great job. He learned being an assistant to Jeff Johns, and I think Jeff has kind of helped tutor him in terms of how to write comics, and I think he's a good Supergirl writer. I'm happy for Jamal from an art standpoint. Gary Frank is awesome on action, and I forget who's drawing it for James Robinson on Superman.
Renato?
I think it is Renato. Yes.
Okay.
Is Gary Frank going to stick around on action?
He better. He's amazing. Gary Frank before.
Well, I spoke to
really?
Yes, I will admit it. But you know what? I can't remember anything of his that I would have read.
You need to read Midnight Nation.
Yeah.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
I've never read that.
The
Squadron Supreme.
Never read that.
As action switches away from Superman, I know that Jeff and Gary are working on another Superman project, and I don't know if it's been announced yet, so I don't want to cheat because we were just...
Well, you already did. You screwed up.
Well, no, I'm saying is they're going to be writing more Superman. I won't say what it is. Okay. But
he's going to Detective.
Yeah, you know.
I hear there's a vacancy over there.
Yeah, pretty soon. No. But no, I think it's a fun story, the new Krypton story. And I love the tease of the new Nightwing and Flamebird. That cracked me up.
Boy, did that confuse a lot of people, me included. That was one of those... I because Who I don't know 1970s DC fucking history.
1960s, my friend.
Okay. So, yeah. Oh. When the last page, last page of action, I'm like, okay. So I call Tom. Who is Nightwing and Flamebird?
The dynamic duo of Kandor, of course.
And that's pretty much what he said.
Yeah,
it's true.
I heard
he's
about
like,
that,
so,
too.
He's
right.
Like, so there was this...
Jeff Johns.
There was a murder. Superman was framed. He couldn't be Superman and Kandor and solve it. So he and Jimmy shrunk down and became Nightwing and Flamebird. And it was great. They had the Night Cave, and they had the Nightmobile, and they had these little jetpacks, utility belts and shit, so they're flying around. It was awesome.
I'm supposed to know this?
Dude, the 8-year-old in me, that was Shakespeare.
I just ignored it.
Shakespeare.
I mean, you don't have to know it, but I think
that's
John.
So funny.
Oh, yeah, it warmed my old gray balls. I gotta tell you, seeing that. It absolutely did, you know? Look at that. There's Nightwing and Flamebird. God bless them.
I just assumed I'd figure it out the next issue that they'd tell me who they were.
And then briefly, when the Supergirl series started, Power Girl and Kara, they were Nightwing and Flamebird for a little while, and Kandor as well. And actually, after Jimmy and Superman initially were Nightwing and Flamebird, then Z of Kandor, the Superman lookalike, took over the took over the Nightwing persona. And this is of course pre Dick Grayson Nightwing, but he was the Nightwing of Kandor in the 70s in the Superman family.
The Nightwing from
was that retconned in?
Or so I've heard.
Really?
What was was what retcon?
Superman.
My head's about to explode.
Oh yeah,
story of this.
Yeah, when heroic. He was. Yeah, I believe that's correct that Dick Grayson named himself Nightwing because of the Kandor story.
Jesus.
He did, but was
I'm sure it's been retconned out since.
No, was it retconned in? Because I think
back
that's as it stands, is that Dick Grayson named himself
good
Nightwing after
good.
The Kandorian Nightwing.
Well, again, you see, after 20 years of ignoring the Silver Age, everyone in DC is embracing it again.
So Nightwing named himself after Superman.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's funny.
Yeah, I like it.
After
Well, not after Superman.
Well, after one of Superman's personas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
I'm telling you.
But no, I like. That's why I DC's like, sales I like are just plummeting.
Quite honestly.
Don't say that shit.
Well, not Green Arrow.
Whatever.
Good story. One of the books that
Book is plummeting because guys like Crank just keep downloading it.
Which one?
Green Arrow, Black Canary.
Oh.
As we learned on the latest episode,
Crank just downloads it.
Well, he was,
I can't pay friends to buy my comic.
I buy your goddamn comic every month.
I buy every month.
Or Connor Hawk.
And I
doesn't
you,
remember who he is, but remembers how to kick some ass. I like that. Well, I like it.
I tell you what, nice wrap up to Judd Winnick's
that's one of the reasons I don't go to message boards now. It's because I'm kind of sick.
I honestly agree.
A nice wrap up. And it's Judd's 5-year run on the character.
He's been on a long time.
Yes, he has.
So,
and I would say back prior when it was a solo book, mm-hmm. I was hit and miss with Judd, but on Green Arrow, Black Canary, I thought it was
really because most of the feedback I hear is almost the opposite.
Well, that's I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm a longtime Green Arrow fan, you know, going back to the 60s, I like what he did.
Cool.
But I mean, there were certain characters, and I'm still not crazy about Mia as Speedy.
Right,
that just kind of bugs me.
Right.
But that aside, I think he had a good handle on Ollie,
uh-huh.
and I thought it was fun. And
it's good.
And I like the new purpose for Connor, too, because, you know, what do you do
the
when
no
you have
purpose?
Two? Well, or we don't know where it's going to go.
I do.
Well, that's true.
Well, I tell you.
Tell me.
The no purpose.
Not to give us a preview of what's coming up, but why don't you tell us about your new writer.
Yeah, new guy.
And,
new
and
guy.
Kind of the what's happening with Green Arrow.
Well, there's Andrew Kreisberg is the new writer. And he is one of the writers on the now canceled Eli Stone.
Oh, too bad.
With Mark Guggenheim.
Well, free up his time.
Yeah, I'm assuming I'll just get tons more scripts now.
Okay.
But he is really good, actually. I've been telling people that it kind of reminds me of, I haven't read all of Meltzer's run, but the first couple issues that I started reading of Meltzer's run, it kind of feels like that. Mm-hmm. It's not. I can't think of specific things that make me think that. It just has that same kind of mood. After 14 issues of globetrotting and guest stars and stuff, it's becoming much more of a street level, in the shadows sort of comic again. There's no motorcycles yet, but it's much more back to basics. It's much more Green Arrow and Black Canary centric. It's not necessarily everybody
good
hanging around
the whole
them.
Team Arrow.
Yeah,
yeah, it
it's
really
not
is.
So much Team Arrow.
Good.
And like I said, it's much more. I would just say overall, it's more dark than it has been.
Very cool.
A little more like Daredevil kind of feel.
Well, you know,
it.
Yeah, actually, yeah. A lot. Yeah. I would describe not like current Daredevil, but it has that kind of feel.
Well, late 70s when
kind of Frank Miller's Daredevil kind of
in the Dollar Comics era when Green Arrow and Black Canary were in World's Finest. That's what it was. It was a street level book.
Well,
and
he traditionally was.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, even the Longbow Hunters, I mean,
oh, definitely,
totally.
Oh, you know, and Grell's
like, I'm not
run.
Even Green Arrow, I'm that dude that dresses
Molly
up
Queen.
Like
right.
Green
yeah.
Arrow.
Yeah, I'm Molly Queen with a hoodie,
yeah,
you know.
So,
that was Longbow Hunters.
It's
well, and the series, the subsequent Grell series. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Mike Grell really had a handle on that character. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think he's still kind of the revered,
that's what
Green
everybody
Arrow.
Thinks.
Yeah,
they think
only except for like older guys like me and Grell himself will say, everything I learned about Green Arrow, I learned from Elliot Maggin. And I mean, it's Elliot Maggin really had the blueprint for Green Arrow back in the 70s, in the early 70s,
right?
So, and really picked up the mantle where Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams left off.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I think, like, you know, as Byrne and Claremont are to the X-Men, I think Mike Grell is to Green Arrow.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, yeah, I agree
with
that.
I think there's any question of that.
Sure. Definitely, definitely.
Well, cool. Well, it sounds like good stuff coming up.
I'm still buying
hope
your book,
so.
Bitch, don't
you're
worry.
You're still still cranking away on Trinity.
Uh huh.
Halfway there,
enjoying
man.
That.
You're more than halfway.
We I'm working on 32. I just got the script today, so
I'm really glad because at first I wasn't crazy about Trinity and I really thought it was taking its time, but once we got into this alternate Earth, I love
it's crazy. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it cracks me up. It's awesome. I love Alfred as a super spy. I love Lois Lane.
Everybody likes
a bitch.
Alfred.
Style just went wild.
Lois Lane, TV bitch.
Everybody, yeah.
it's this alternate Earth where the three don't exist.
Yeah, everybody.
And it's what happened.
Everybody was complaining when it first started that I was like, this book isn't even about Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. And I'm like, that's kind of the point. It's like what happens when they're not around.
What's important? Yeah, what's
and you kind of get to see how cool important. Alfred actually is if he has no Batman. You know?
Right.
He had a life before, you know.
Exactly, and it was always hinted at, and you always saw little panels of Alfred's life as this MI5 or MI6 agent back in the day. Well, now we're getting it full blown, and he's kind of like.
Well, James Bond.
Yeah, I was gonna say like Sean. Yeah, but like Sean Connery, so like James Bond, like you know,
like
middle
what
age
I enjoyed
James
at 52. You know, when it's
oh, it is a into, lot you know, like that.
Yeah, sure,
that's yeah. So like I said, I mean, I started reading it, but I decided I was gonna wait on it and see how it became and pick up the trades.
It's gonna be the first thing that I library bind.
I think
when I find my those issues of Blue Beetle, I'm going to bind all of those.
Yeah.
For me, it didn't kick in until the teens, but then once it did in the teens, now I enjoy it. And now, like Crazy Vince, I look forward to it every week. So that's where I'm in agreement with Vince. And it scares
crazy
me.
Vince now.
Crazy Vince. And I love you, Crazy Vince. Don't get me wrong.
Well, speaking of 007, has anyone seen Quantum of Solace?
I have not yet. Did you finally see it?
No, everybody's telling me I need to go see it.
We can go tomorrow if you want.
Yeah, that, I mean, sweet. That should be. Everybody keeps saying
I don't even
I'm
like
in
James.
Yeah, I know. I want to. Well, now I definitely want to see it because, God, for 2 years I've been telling Norton he looks like what's his face in Grindhouse, and now we keep hearing that there's.
I've had like 10 people this week tell me I need to see Quantum of Solace because there's a dude that looks
there's
like
there's a CIA guy that apparently looks just like Mike.
Oh, really? the guy with
I'm trying to remember
the guy with Felix. Felix's part? No.
Yeah, Jeffrey. No. Yeah, it is,
that guy with the stash? Well, he doesn't have the stash.
Like, it's a tall, woolly man that apparently looks like Mike.
No. Okay. He's got a ridiculous stash.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
He's got glasses, too.
Said it the other day on Twitter. I saw that. Ivan Brandon said it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I enjoyed it. It was a really good James Bond movie and a great continuation of Casino Royale. And I'm looking forward to the third one.
See, people I trust that really love Bond, I keep hearing mixed things. I hear people like you that say they love it. My program director at Love FM, die hard Bond fan, hardcore Bond fan. And he's like, took the day off to see it in the premiere. Mm-hmm. And he's like, dude, I was a little disappointed. And I'm like, yikes.
What kind of Bond fan? Is he a Connery fan? Is he a Moore fan?
Well, he's in his late 50s, so he goes way back, but loves Daniel Craig. He felt that a lot of, and again, this is without me seeing it, that a lot of the camera shots were very Bourne Identity-ish, and Paul Gress.
Yeah, well, they can't
my only complaint was.
There was actually a couple of scenes where I'm like, yeah, that was very much like Bourne. There's like a knife fight scene where it's straight out of Bourne Identity, but I'm not that big of a Bond fan. I like Sean Connery's Bond. Other than that, I thought they all kind of blew.
I've never been a huge Bond fan.
Yeah,
it's
killing me.
I like four Bond movies, the Sean, you know, four or five Sean Connery Bond movies. I think Roger Moore's a joke.
That was the only one I saw when I was a kid.
The only thing I liked Roger Moore as Bond was when he was like pretending to be Bond in Cannonball Run, basically.
Seymour.
That was awesome.
But I've just never been that big of a Bond fan.
Well, we both kind of agree that the focus on the gadgets has kind of gone away.
I kind of like the gadgets. But that was a very Moore thing.
It was a Connery thing, too. I mean, God, Thunderball was
killing
them,
make a watch that shoots a laser?
Thunderball was really the first one that was gadget heavy up before.
Yes,
that really weren't at all. There was a couple of gadgets here and
there,
but mostly it wasn't. I like the idea of very basic. It's the beginning of his career.
It's Bond year one.
Yeah, and that's what I really like. I also really enjoy the fact that Daniel Craig actually looks like a guy that could hurt somebody if he punched him.
Yeah,
it looks like a guy who kicked somebody's ass. You know, and isn't some pretty boy actor.
He's my new favorite action star.
That's the problem, Mike. By the way, there are all these gadgets now. They're not special anymore.
That's a good point because now I'm thinking about Casino Royale, and I'm like, everything that's in there that's a gadget is also like
real.
It's in there to sell.
We've given you a GPS locator. Oh, really? Yeah. Thanks. I already got one.
I got one of those.
Yeah, like
19. So did US Cellular. Thanks, Q.
1980. 5, my iPhone would have been the coolest.
Yeah, that's what happened. Q was downsized. It's like, come on, you gotta keep up. Come
on, we're relocating you to the cell phone division.
And I didn't when Casino Royale came out, I was not that interested in it because I didn't care about Bond. I didn't watch it when it first came out. I waited until it came out on Blu-ray, and then I ended up eventually watching it, and I really enjoyed it. And then I was really excited to see Quantum of Solace, and I really enjoyed it, too, because it was, I mean, it's literally 10 minutes after
I've
Casino
heard
Royale.
That. Yeah,
I mean, it's right after, and I would really suggest going and watching Casino Royale
right before seeing
because there's stuff in it that's just like, the two complaints I'll say about Quantum of Solace is, one, it got to the point where I was just like, yeah, I don't know what's going on with
the
story.
Well, you know, Casino Royale was kind of like that. It's
too,
almost like that plot was secondary.
Yeah.
It's like,
and
it was really, you just wanted to see him running around.
And it's there. I mean, when I started thinking about it more, and it's like, okay, it's there. It's just, it took a while for me to have to, like, think about, okay, why is he doing what he's doing?
Yeah.
But having read the book.
But the action was
the book,
awesome, so I didn't care that much.
Having read the Casino Royale book,
well,
I was pleased.
Well, it doesn't follow, though.
Well, and there really isn't a Quantum of Solace book. Yeah. So, but having read the book, actually, there are enough elements in the Casino Royale film, unlike so many other Bond films, that really are just in name only linked to the books. Moonraker is a perfect example like that. Spy Who Loved Me.
But I really enjoyed it. The only other complaint was the editing, which is something I don't ever really pay attention to. But it was like...
very choppy.
Yeah, I mean, there was so many quick scene cuts. Just constant. I mean, like, even where it didn't even make sense where he's, like, walking into a room. You know, I mean, like, there was a scene with him walking into a hospital room, like, getting out of his car, walking into a hospital, going into the room to see M. And it was like 9 cuts.
That's interesting.
Of him walking into a room, basically. It was very strange.
You go back to the original 5, and actually I'll throw the Lazenby film in there as well, because Peter Hunt was the editor of the first 5 Connery films. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of editing going on if you go back and really look at a lot of those early films.
Well, I just
understand what you're saying. So
I just bought...
which ones?
They're coming out on Blu-ray now.
Yeah, they're coming out on Blu-ray. I bought Thunderball. From Russia with Love and Dr. No.
Awesome.
And I was blown away by the quality.
Remastered.
The remastered color. They did on the Dr. No one, they do a featurette on like the company that they hired to redo it. And they took their original negatives and ran them through this whole thing to get rid of all the fuzz and recolored everything. They look unbelievable. And those films were made to be seen. I mean, because the scenery, the locales that they go to, and it's just unbelievable, beautiful.
Those films are time capsules of what the world looked like in the early 60s.
Absolutely.
And it really was ambitious filmmaking back then. And it was not only the locales, but the all-star international cast that they did. It wasn't just a British cast. Mm-hmm. They went to other countries. They would, you know, get these hotties from, like, Miss World and Miss...
Yeah.
Yes, Ursula Andrews is a perfect example.
It looks fantastic in Blu-ray.
But really, like, I really do. I love
all
those films.
All 4 feet
I really
of
do.
Her
I
forehead.
Think they're exceptional international films. Yeah, but back then she, you know, her body was well proportioned.
Yeah, I didn't really look at her head that much.
She was all
right. I can't help it. The sun gleams off of it.
Well, and From Russia with Love, I love that film because Lottie Linya is in that film. And if you guys don't know who that is, the song Mack the Knife. Uh-huh. Ooh, Miss Lottie Linya and old Lucy Brown. Lottie Linya was Kurt Vile's wife, the man who wrote the Three Penny Opera. And she performed the original Three Penny Opera. And
you
is
know
this
shit, John. Jesus.
You know why? Because I watched the bonus featurette on From Russia with Love, and narrated by Patrick McGee, and I was blown away. I'm like, I had no idea that's who that was. I mean, she's this cool little German lady with a dagger in her shoe, a Russian lady, and I'll kill you, Mr. Bond. And it turns out she's little Lottie Linya, for Christ's sake. I was like, my God.
When I first started buying Blu-ray movies, I was pretty selective as far as like what I would get. I was like, okay, it has to be like huge action,
big sci-fi
special effects stuff.
Sure.
And I'm like, I'm not buying old movies on Blu-ray. What's the point? Mm-hmm. But I gotta say, man, it's like
that's
watching
cool.
whole new movies.
Oh, I bet.
It just, I couldn't believe the detail. And like I said, because of the locales and everything that they did with
the
those
cars,
films, everything. It's
well,
just...
and that's the best Bond films have been ridiculously over budgeted films where, as Roger Moore I've heard say in recent interviews, every dollar is on the screen. They make sure that you see how much money they spent. Mm-hmm. And that was the cool thing about Casino Royale. Where it dipped was during the Timothy Dalton years. And why? Because the budget dropped. Yeah. And they were shooting in Mexico where it was cheaper. Yeah. And literally, I mean, the budgets went down and it showed on screen. So it seems like with Casino Royale, the Broccoli Family and Michael Wilson are back on page to make good Bond films. So I am very hopeful. I've just been too damn busy, so I'm looking forward to seeing
it. I enjoyed it a lot.
The last Bond thing that we have to mention before we move on here.
Oh.
Is, man, the watch that you found.
Yeah, Swatch is making the official Bond villain watches.
Swatches?
And yeah, Swatch. And they're not. Awesome. No, they're cool. Pretty cool. Some of them are like the cheaper plastic Swatch, well, but yeah, some are like 80s. nice, you know, Swiss timepieces, and the one I like was the Dr. No, or no, the Thunderball one, the Emil
Blofeld or Largo?
Largo.
Emil Largo.
It's a really nice
watch. It's a really nice looking
watch. I'll take three Blofelds and a Largo to go.
It's got the Schmersh.
Spectre. It's Spectre.
Oh, it's Spectre. Yeah.
Spectre.
Yeah, Smersh in the books. Yeah.
Logo, the Octopus.
And before we leave Bond, two things. If you guys haven't seen the Titan collections of the James Bond comic strips, totally worth getting. They're amazing and usually are either 1995 or 1795. They're great. Casino Royale and Dr. No were published 4 years before the Dr. No film. And it is crazy how John McCluskey, the artist, drew Sean Connery. I mean, the Daily Mail comic strip was around for years before the Bond films. And I think casting was done with that comic strip in mind because it sure as hell looks like Sean Connery.
I watched the Dr. No. They had a nice featurette on there.
Uh-huh.
And
They were on the original
comic strip, and
they were on the original
CBS. The CBS, there was a CBS show.
There was one of those 50s anthology shows where they did Casino Royale, and it was, I forget the actor who played Jimmy Bond. It was called Jimmy Bond, and Le Chiffre was Peter Lorre was Le Chiffre.
Peter Lorre.
We have ways of making you talk, Mr. Bond.
And I found out, and Chris knew this already, but I didn't know that Ian Fleming wrote Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Which is just so bizarre.
This is the Fleming Centennial. He would have been on 100, Sir Ian, if he'd lived. Christopher Lee's cousin. How about that?
And really? he wanted to use Christopher Lee as Dr. No, actually, I think.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, but and he did.
He was Scaramanga.
Yeah,
Man with the Golden Gun. But,
I think it was Doctor. I think he wanted him to be Doctor. No.
There's more trivia per square inch of this show.
That's good. That's good. You know, do we have time to do a quick comic?
Sure, go.
The Mammoth Book of Crime Comics came out from Running Press. They're the same guys who did the War and Horror big-ass anthologies from a year or so ago. And, man, I am telling you, it is $17.95 regularly priced. I was telling Sal, it's 480 pages.
Wow.
And you've got Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, Alex Toth, Simon and Kirby, Bernie Krigstein, Johnny Craig.
What?
I'm trying to think of what. There's a Max Collins, Terry Beatty, Ms.
Is the Trade Dress big ass anthology?
Because
it should be.
It should be. But it's incredible. It's a black book.
So
you can't miss it.
What is it again?
It's called the Mammoth Book of Crime Comics.
Okay.
Mammoth Book of Crime.
And it's published by who?
It's Running Press.
Okay.
And it's incredible. It's all black and white. And it has, much like I didn't buy the horror one. I bought the war one, though, before it. And it has a lot of British crime stories in it as well. But it goes back to the 40s. It has the Dashiell Hammett written Secret Agent X9 comic strip from the 30s that was the last written work of Dashiell Hammett's before he went all Hollywood and all screenplays in the 30s and 40s. There's the Mickey Spillane written Mike Hammer comic strip in there from the 50s. I mean, it is really, really cool. And it is and again, also has Jordi Bernet is in there. And Jordi Bernet does the cover.
Nice.
It's incredible. And several Alan Moore stories, a couple Neil Gaiman stories. It's great. And it really covers all the decades and good intros and each chapter, a nice little, you know, text piece to accompany each chapter about the writer or the artist and stuff. So it
sounds like a pretty dense book. It's not one that you're just going to flip through.
That's what I'm saying, man. 480 pages, and it's phone book size, but it's totally worth it. That, and I also got, by the way, The Art of Noel Sickles, the man who did Scorchy Smith, which was a big 30s crime newspaper strip, and he was a contemporary of Milton Caniff's, and he just couldn't maintain the daily schedule of doing a comic strip. Mm-hmm. So he stopped, and he continued to illustrate and was a fine illustrator, kind of like Lou Fine was in the 40s. And I don't just mean fine in terms of last name. But there's a lot of examples of his work during the war and during the 30s and stuff he did for the Saturday Evening Post and Collier's and stuff. And that book was incredible to get. I believe IDW put it out. And, Jesus, it's like as thick as a phone book. And it's just the heaviest coffee table book I've bought in years. I mean, it's like a 20-pound book. And I'm just loving that. And I got that from Discount Comic Book Service.
Oh.
Our boys. Thank you, Cameron. And but exactly. But it's I am blown away with this guy's art. And I'll talk more about it on my show. And I hope to get the editor on at some point, because Marty Pascoe was just talking about how great this guy was. And I had never seen his stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Maybe I'll see it. It has the entire run of this Scorchy Smith character, and it is this kind of crime adventure. I know, what an awesome name.
Scorchy.
You know.
Get over here.
Speaking exactly. of, you gonna talk to Don Glut?
Yeah, thanks. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to horn him, but I knew
Poach.
I was. Yeah,
Poach.
Exactly. I'll admit.
Poacher.
No, I'm so bummed Seeley hasn't had the chance to meet him yet, because they.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's the thing. And like I was telling Don, I'm like, I remember seeing the ads for his films, his 8mm
really,
and 16mm films as a kid.
The round table with Don Glut should be Tim Seeley, you, and Hillary Barta.
Oh,
that
yeah.
should be the, that'd be the four of you
I'll
guys.
I'll just sit back and listen.
Yeah, well, we should arrange that sometime. That'd be a lot of fun.
That would be a good one.
Because, yeah, I mean, that's. He's, I mean, there's a guy that worked with Forry Ackerman, for Christ's sake, you know, who, as Don was telling me, I don't know if he mentioned it on your guys' show, there was reports in the last couple of weeks that he's in pretty failing health, and he's in his 90s, but apparently so many people have just, like, immediately came, and all Forry get better and stuff, that he's doing better. It's kind of like, remember when DiMaggio was, like, on death's door?
Yeah,
and he got better?
Yeah.
And got so much better that he was mad because, I think it was MSNBC, accidentally said he had died. And he got well enough to be able to call them and say, hey, what the hell? I'm still alive. Go to hell. Leave me alone. I'm DiMaggio, damn it. I'm Mr. Coffee. Don't fuck
with
me.
Mr. Coffee.
Exactly.
Nice.
So, I'm happy to hear that apparently Ackerman is doing better, and hopefully maybe we'll make a recovery. But, no, I look forward to talking to Don Glut. I hope that happens very soon.
Yeah, I went to film school with George Lucas.
For Christ's sake.
Yeah, wrote the... Empire Strikes Back novelization.
Jeez. Yes, any guerrilla monster filmmaker is a friend of mine. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. We got any emails?
Yeah, we do. Oh my gosh.
Let me read.
This is going to be a
Let me read them.
We have two.
Let Mike read them.
Two. Here you go, Mike.
No, Mike hates right. What do we got?
Mike hates to read.
You're so good at it though.
Johnny Potarf. Potarf?
Okay, give it to him.
Johnny Pottorf? Pottorf? How would you say it? Hey guys, I have decided to bookshelf all my trades, and I was wondering, do you bag your trades and put them on the shelf or just
no, nerd.
Them?
No.
I have been listening to your show for about 2 years, and I have to say it is one of the best.
That's like having plastic covers on your couch, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No. I don't bag my trades.
How
I do
annoying
some...
would that be? I want to go read something. I got to open my freaking trade.
My hermetically sealed book here.
Really. The only trade I would bag if I got it would be like Miracle Man. And that's because it's...
Well, because you can't get it. Because
you can't get it. So, yeah. That would be the only one.
Yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't bag. I would
plus,
it
just looked ridiculous.
I will admit,
bookshelf,
I had those Superman, Batman, and Shazam 30s to the 70s collections from the 70s, and I wish I had kept those in better shape.
You look like a crazy person. So. You come with your shelves covered in plastic.
Yeah, so no, I do not bag.
I know first edition collectors that do, like, of novels and stuff that actually do bag their first editions.
Well, I mean, some stuff I suppose.
I buy trades to read them.
Yeah. That's the whole point. So, no, Johnny Potiff, Portorf, whatever your name is.
But thank you for emailing.
Yes.
And please email the show with your comments and questions at info@aroundcomics.com.
Yeah. Paul wrote, I listened to the first book on my iPod because my wife said it was so good.
He's talking about Twilight.
Well, you could have put that in
no,
here. Sorry.
Really?
I kept waiting for something to happen, but it never did. Yeah, that's pretty much that book. My wife and all her friends are in love with this Edward, but I just don't get it. It's got to be a chick thing. Fear Agent rules, hell yeah. I read most of the first book, and...
No?
At the time of
I mean, I could understand what, like...
Yeah.
Did you read any that sort of disturbs me, as well? The thing that disturbs me about it is, like, well, and kind of like with Harry Potter, but... The amount of adults that are into this. And,
yes.
You know,
like
Vanita
Rogers.
Yeah, that was, I'm sorry, but Vanita. I love Vanita.
No, I think
but that
funny.
Was creepy.
No. Spawning with her kids, man. Her kids
no,
are
no,
totally
no, no.
that
Not
age.
That she went and saw the movie, but the comments she made about Edward being the hottest movie, you know, character ever.
Oh, that's
just kind of weird,
that's
considering
funny.
He's in high school. I know he's a vampire and technically... However,
whip
you're
your
old.
Ass next October.
Her husband.
That's just
her
a little weird.
Is 12 years old.
Oh, well, then
Vanita's,
that makes
yeah.
perfect sense.
Yeah, he was bitten by a vampire.
I can completely understand why, like, a 13-year-old girl would really enjoy this book. The adults that enjoy it as much, I don't quite get. I thought it was, not that it was poorly written, just very, I mean, it's a very contrived story. I mean, it's
it makes you want to go out and build a franchise.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, it is so, I mean, just pinpoint exactly who they're talking to. That I just went, how can you not see this? How can you not?
That's what I don't get with all the Laurel Hamilton stuff out there. Anne Rice, Sookie Stackhouse, all this stuff. Where does it end? I mean, I guess every one of
porn.
These. Well, and I didn't even mention Buffy.
Gay vampire,
you know,
porn.
Well, I guess. I mean, but I'm. I mean, I guess each of these audiences discover this specific, you know, franchise on their own. Because I tire of, and that's what it bothered me about True Blood. It's like, oh, you're a vampire. Oh. How does this work? And it's like, are you shitting me? Where the hell have you been? Have you not watched Buffy? Have you not watched Dracula? What the fuck? What do you mean, how does this work?
Buffy fans and Twilight fans will get into like knife fights. You know, about
well, it's like Star Wars and Star Trek knife fights.
Yeah. I just
knife fights and the movie, bitch slapping fights.
From what I've saw, the movie trailers. I mean, it just looked awful. That
it looks like a terrible movie.
Yeah, it looks like a bad TV.
And it's not, you're not going to be able to argue with a 13-year-old girl about the quality of a movie.
Well, that's there. That's
anybody that likes it, great. I don't have a problem with somebody liking it.
The actor, the guy that plays Edward, damn near riot on the South Side at a mall when he was here last week. Yeah.
Was he in Evergreen Park?
He's going to get a lot of tail.
At the Brickyard Mall?
He's going to get a lot of goth tail.
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah. Yeah, that guy doesn't need to sleep alone for the rest of his life.
Oh my God, Edward!
I don't know. I read about three quarters of that first book, and I was just like, "Really?
He kind of looks goofy, though.
This is what people are
has
going
anyone
to
read the Sookie Stackhouse? You know, the stuff that True Blood is based on?
No. I like True Blood initially.
I like looking at Anna Paquin in a T-shirt. That's about it. You know, and actually, there was some real.
I like the actor who played the
Bill
vampire. Yeah,
Bill.
I thought he
Bill.
That'd be Bill.
And there were some things in it, but yeah, I don't know. Vampires.
Vampires are on my ninja list.
There's just a lot of
vampires, ninjas.
Vampires, ninjas, and post-apocalyptic stories.
And it's British actors.
I like British actors. I just don't like it when they pretend to not be British.
It's like if Seymour Butts were one of the directors on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That's what True Blood is to me. It's like, all right, cut to the fucking, please. All right, we've had about 10 minutes of story. Start fucking now.
Set a record tonight for how many times we say fuck.
What I'm loving is that Lucy and her publicist are going to be listening.
That's true.
Oh, I'm sorry. First, the creepy old man is like leering at me.
They turned it off after she was
on. Yeah,
probably.
I'm sure they
God,
did.
I hope.
Let's hope so. Sorry, Lucy.
Hero creates a financial
safety net.
Simon
and Schuster?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Touchstone Books.
They put out fucking books, too.
Oh, surely. Come on.
Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support, and essentials of life. I'm not going to read the rest of it because you know how important Hero is, and we talked about it last week. You have an opportunity now to donate to Hero. You can do it really easily at our website. We've got a PayPal button, and donate $10 or more, and we've got some freebies that we will send you. What are you cracking
up about?
I'm
sorry. I don't want to get into it. It was something completely...
Okay.
It was just a vision of...
Sookie Stackhouse.
No, I was thinking... You were talking about the Hero Initiative, and I was thinking, you know, it's getting to be winter, and... You know, there may be. I wasn't going to go into it. I see that road. That's why I didn't want to get into it.
Donate to the Hero Initiative. You can do that by going to aroundcomics.com. We got a Hero Initiative PayPal. You can also go to Hero Initiative. Stop it. We can also go to heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. We've got about 10 gifts ranging from Afro Samurai, Deluxe Edition. I'm gonna throw some stuff in. Oh. The complete Witchblade series.
Nice.
We've got Rich Kozlowski sent me signed editions of.
I don't know what anybody wants.
What would you like to do?
Some stuff.
Signed copies of Green Arrow, Black Canary.
I don't
want
to get you nothing. I get you something.
Okay.
No, yeah. I'm just saying I'll do whatever you want.
Okay. Well,
I didn't know.
We
just started doing this one.
Yeah,
we had some extra stuff laying around.
Yeah.
I got a stack of manga.
manga books at home.
See, you guys are much more organized than I am. I can't do this shit on Word Balloon. I have enough trouble trying to get the damn episode out. You know?
They care, John.
I know.
Hey, you know, it's a crap load of manga books at home.
It's not worth it. What we've been able to facilitate for Heroes, probably what I'm the most proud of with Around Comics, I think, to date.
It's really the only thing we could be proud of.
Yeah, you've generated a lot of money for us, man.
We've kind of going back to what we did at New York Con and with the Month of Heroes.
In double digits here?
We've raised a little over $12,000.
$250 million.
Five figures to Hero Initiative from a lowly podcast. I am very impressed.
So, and
I am not.
It's really the most important charity that you can give to if you are a comic book fan. That, and you know, CBLDF is another great charity. So
I'll give you one of my Jerry Ordway Trinity pages.
Whoa.
Okay.
That's right.
Damn.
I tell you what, it's
that's got to be a bigger donation.
How about for
we gotta
make an auction for that.
We're gonna have to have tiered donations.
Seriously,
how about you if you're interested in a Jerry Ordway inked Mike Norton drawn Trinity page, we'll go ahead and auction it. So go ahead and send me your silent bids on that, and you can send that to Chris at aroundcomics.com. And bid on it, and we'll open up the bidding at $100, and send in what you would bid on that, and we'll close off the bidding December 15th.
Sure, sounds nice and arbitrary.
December 15th. So send that in, and Mike will send me a scan of the. Of the page, we'll put that up on the forum so you can take a look at
see what you're bidding on. See what you're bidding on. Obviously.
Absolutely. So go to aroundcomics.com. Go to the forum. We'll have that posted. And thank you, Mike. That's
sure.
It's very generous. So we'll get that. Heck, I might have to bid on that.
All I got is
you're gonna end up buying it. You'll be the highest bidder.
Did you see what I scored today?
No, I did not see what you scored today.
That's why Hillary dropped.
Oh,
by.
Is that Hillary page? Yeah, there's a page of his that I want to buy.
Oh, nice. Yeah, wow.
Trillo. It's Hillary inked over Chirillo.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that awesome? Really
nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So, yeah, I'm very,
that's a lovely Heath Houston.
All right. Yes. So yes, you can email me with your silent bids for the Mike and Ordway. Yeah, this sucker needs to go for
it won't go for less than $250 because that'll be at least your bid.
That will at least be my bid. So email me with
how
email
much of the $12,000 is from you?
A few hundred. Don't tell my wife that. If you don't want to go the bigger money for the original art page, we do have you know, like I said, the Afro Samurai Deluxe Director's Cut, the complete Witchblade on DVD.
Very worth it, kids.
We've got Rich Kozlowski, the King
copies,
and I've got some cool.
I got some other stuff too. I got a crap load of manga books. I got a couple of novels people have sent me. I've got.
I just bought the Hellboy Library edition, so I've got Hellboy trades that I can send you that are reprinted and so yeah, I've got some.
There's something else I wanted to buy and replace trade with.
So help veteran comic book creators and get some cool stuff.
Here.
Some Hellboy. Dark Horse Presents issues.
Ooh.
Very nice.
I could maybe
do it.
Part with.
Man, that'd be tough.
Do it. Do it. Do it.
Oh, I got a complete run.
Oh, all right. Don't do it. We'll all right. Well, I tell you what, this is a really long episode. I'm going to tear through this really quick. Check out Tom versus the Flash.
It's a fine show.
Two, three times a week as Tom walks you through the history of the DC Universe, one issue at a time.
Footnotes, if you will.
I'm on 11 o'clock comics every week with Vince B, David Price, and Wood.
Making no sense in
crazy
conspiracy
people call
theories.
In.
I'm telling you, like Norton and I tear out our hair listening to this.
Crazy people call in. That's right. I'd like to thank Lucy.
Mike and I are starting a weapons, crazy weapons. Podcast.
Yeah,
called
what's
Overkill?
Overkill
Show. www.overkillshow.com.
I will be the Ninja
That's
Star
not a joke.
Specialist.
I have no doubt.
The site's already up.
You were all excited about your batarangs the other day, crazy man. I saw you.
Batarangs are sweet. And then I found Bat. I don't know what the hell.
Wolverine.
There's all sorts of crazy shit.
I'd like to thank Lucy Nisley once again for dropping by talking about French Milk. Once again, available Touchstone Books at your finer comic shops and bookstores. Mike, thanks for dropping by. John, sure. Always good to hear from you. We got Brandon and Kyle. We're sitting here in the Around Comics
Peanut Gallery.
thanks to Mark, as always, for hosting us here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in...
Out and around comics.
Crazy conspiracy
and fucking.
Shit.
Fucking in 3, 2,
oh,
1.
Oh, God, no.
Bonnie White, Bonnie White, Bonnie White made a deal for some angel food.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.